California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the California Underground. I'm your host, Phil, and as always with me is my trusted co-host, the best and fastest researcher in the West, Camille. How are you doing?
I'm good. A little jet-lagged still. How are you?
We're both jet-lagged. I had intimated where I was. This is so weird. Like, we both, out of nowhere, like, we didn't plan this. We didn't coordinate this. But we both planned trips to Europe, not the same trips, but we were both gone in Europe at the same time. So, like, we didn't even talk about it. It was just like, hey, we're going to London and Scotland. We're going over here. So that's where we were for the last week. So jet lag sucks, especially coming all the way back.
You were with your wife in London and Scotland. I was with my husband and kids in Italy and Switzerland.
Correct. Like, we were still countries apart, but we were in Europe at the same time. Right. It just worked out that way. I don't know. We did not plan it that way. Jet lag sucks, especially coming back from Europe to California. It's like 8 hour difference, I think. And then
it was nine. Well, then the time changed. Actually, I was 9 hours ahead, and then California sprung forward.
So they gained an hour. So it's still 8 hours.
So then I was 8 hours. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
so
the best way to
do like savings thing, but then I got home Monday morning, so I'm just tired.
It's like the best way to describe it to people is like you flip your day on its head, because like when you should be sleeping, you're awake, and like when you're getting ready to go to bed, people are just like waking up and going to work. So your whole like it takes a little bit, and then coming back, and anyway, so that's where we've been. And even though it's been about 2 weeks since the election happened, the primary elections on March 5th. And anyone who tuned into NBC on the streaming to check me out, that was awesome. It was a lot of fun. Thank you, NBC, for having me on. There were still results trickling in for the next 2 weeks. And that's why we said election results thus far. Now, there's been some races that we've been keeping our eye on that have been decided, like Prop 1, which we're going to get to. There were some races that were too close to call. There's some races like the Shasta County Supervisor, which is quite literally one of the closest races, still too close to call. So that's why we're saying election results thus far. So I don't think we really missed out on anything by not doing a show the week of the primary, because the election, like the results weren't done that Thursday. So we gave it some time and we actually have a better idea. There were races that were decided that night, but there are still a lot of races that also flipped like the following days. So before we get started, any thoughts about the election results that you want to get right off the bat?
I'm disappointed Prop 1 happened. I mean, I expected it. It was so close that I was fingers crossed, hopeful that it wouldn't. And of course, last night, late afternoon, yesterday, heard.
I was bummed.
I love doing this podcast, but I loved like 2 weeks of no politics.
It's nice to decompress.
Nice
to decompress.
Go on vacation and be with my family and just, you know, doing all that, and people would send me stuff and I'm just like, hard to, it's like, I do not, you hold America down. I'm good.
Yeah, it's California won't burn down in a week if we're gone not talking about politics. It's always important. I think people should just like also disconnect from politics, because it can like consume a lot of people. And then I know there's a lot of people who like it makes them their whole life. But disconnect, enjoy the beauty, you know, go travel, go see a different country, go to some beautiful country and look around and enjoy something. Live your life. It's not all politics. Anyway, so a lot of people always are like, why does it take so long to get all of our results in California? Mm-hmm. And I mean, the point of this episode, again, it's kind of funny that we're still talking about election results 2 weeks later. But I think it's important to kind of go over why it does take so long. I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm not trying to explain it. I'm not trying to rationalize it. I'm just trying to explain it so people can say, okay, this is why it takes so long. This is an article from CalMatters that says, 2 weeks plus one day after voting ended in California's primary, there are 108,000 ballots left to be counted, and a dozen congressional and legislative races remain too close to call. While the uncounted ballots are less than 2% of the 7.7 million cast, readers have again asked why it takes so long for California to finish counting votes. California started mailing ballots to all registered voters for the November 2020 election. This year, about 50% of ballots cast were counted on primary night, March 5th, compared to 41% in June 2022, according to data from the California Voter Foundation. But processing mail-in ballots can take time. Any ballots postmarked by March 5th and received by March 12th still get counted. Also, there are a number of steps county election offices take to ensure the integrity of each voter's ballot, some of which can't start until after Election Day, and counties have varying levels of staffing and resources that can impact how quickly the work is done. As of Wednesday night, 13 of 58 counties reported completing their tallies. Let's see. The state passed some laws to try and speed up the process. One new law allows counties to immediately scan vote-by-mail ballots from people who bring them in person. Placer County did so this primary. About 8,000 people used the system of nearly 15,000 who came to vote centers. Another new law counties to contact voters via email or text for signature verification, but both laws just went to effect January 1st. In Orange County, the last batch of notification letters were sent out March 13th, according to Bob Page, the county's registrar of voters. Voters have until 2 days prior to certification of the election to respond. So there's sort of an overview. And again, I'm not like advocating. I'm not saying it's the best system. This is how it is in California. Mail-in ballots are definitely a big thing. It takes a while. As long as they're postmarked by the 5th, they start kind of like trickling in. So there's a lot of people who probably drop it off the day of election, and it kind of gets to the registrar of voters. And then you got to think about the fact that, like, sure, there's a lot the day of who are counting ballots, like election day, there's a lot of people counting and people working or volunteering. After that, I mean, as time goes on, you're going to get less and less volunteers. The staff kind of slowly goes down. It's not perfect. I'm not going to say it's perfect why it takes so long. Mail-in ballots definitely slows everything down. Any thoughts?
No, I mean, I'm with you on that, that we could agree or disagree, but those are the facts. Those are all the reasons why it does take time. And California is a huge state. I mean, we're a very populated state. And so, yeah, there are a lot of states that are like right on it and good for them. But we have all of our own rules and regulations, and we are many people.
Fun fact, this will be the last time I talk about my Europe trip. Scotland only has about 5 million people, which to me is crazy because San Diego County has about 4.4 million people. And when I told our tour guide at a distillery, I was like, our county has about 5 million people. She was like, are you serious? Our whole country is 5.5 million people. But to go to your point that it's a large state, there's a lot of people, although 7.7 million ballots cast seems like low when there's, what, 48 million people in California. It's a primary. It's not abnormal to have low voter turnout. Yeah. A lot of people don't even really care. A lot of people don't even know. I don't think a lot of people are educated on like what the point of a primary is. So then when we get to the general, they're like, oh, God, why do we only get a choice between two Democrats? Or who are these horrible people? Why do we never get good choices? It's like, well, if you were paying attention back in March, you might have had a say and you could have helped. But by the general in November, it's a little too late for that, which we'll get to Prop 1 in a little bit and why I think they put it on the primary rather than the general. So let's start at one of the biggest races with national implications, the Senate race, which was, we did the Senate debate. we did a whole episode on it about how unimpressive they are. And shocker to no one, two unimpressive people made it to the top two of vote getters, Adam Schiff versus Steve Garvey. Now, it's no surprise, Adam Schiff had a lot of money behind him. He played the whole, I'm going to boost Steve Garvey's profile to let people know there's a Republican running, attach him to Trump, get people who are Trump voters to back behind Steve Garvey. And guess what? Now it's Schiff versus Garvey. So congratulations, Senator Schiff. And in the jungle primary here in California, that's sort of a game that is played, fair or not. That's sort of how politicians play it. They'll actually boost their opponent so that they know, well, I'm in a blue state. I'm running to be senator. If I can get a Republican on the ballot, and it's me as a Democrat, I might as well start measuring the window drapings in my office because I'm going to be the next senator. Were you surprised by the outcome of Schiff? I almost called him Stiff. Schiff versus Garvey.
I actually was a little bit surprised. Not Schiff. I expect Schiff to win the general. But Garvey even with all the money that Schiff was spending on propping him up as, you know, the Trump supporter, I was surprised Garvey made it this far. Well, I shouldn't say this far, but Schiff got 31.6% of the votes. Garvey got 31.5% of the votes. I was not expecting it to be so close. I thought Katie Porter and Garvey would be a heck of a lot closer. I forget what she got, but it was very low.
It was, hold on, I can tell you.
I think I have it up.
She only got 15.3% of the vote.
Okay.
That's thought it was a long way off. She didn't even come close to sniffing the top two. Yeah.
Right.
Eric Early only got 3.3% of the vote. I don't like how this is organized, that it's not organized by
and Barbara running. Lee, 9.8. I know, I want it to be. Are you looking at the SOS?
Yeah, I'm looking at the SOS. Yeah. So I'm looking at it's weird how it's kind of set up. You have to kind of go search for people.
Yeah, so Barbara Lee got 9.8%. Those two combined didn't make it that much.
Yeah, and that's definitely, I think, a big part of what Adam Schiff was planning to do. Anybody who'd been watching TV in the past couple of weeks leading up to the election definitely saw the Steve Garvey is too conservative for California ad played up a jillion times. And that's a tactic to get people who are Republicans go, wait a second, I don't think building a border wall is too conservative. I'm going to vote for this Steve Garvey fellow. And it worked. It promoted him. It got people to know who he was.
Right. Because like you said, most people don't even pay attention to the primary. And so the fact that Garvey did that well in the primary, I shifted that.
Yeah. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend like, oh, you know, Garvey did so well and he was ahead on election night and all that. And I'm not going to blow smoke up any of our listeners' butts that we've never been that way. We're going to be honest with you. It's going to be Senator Schiff. Garvey's not going to make a run and win in a blue state. And I mean, if he does, it'll be the craziest political upset in entire history. Because the Democrats will come home.
The other votes, which were a few Republicans, they don't add up to anything. And then, of course, no party preference and Democrat. Barbara Lee's and Katie Porter's votes are more than likely going to Schiff. And so come the general, he's going to very likely win with over, 50, 60%.
Yeah, it's not really going to even be close. So,
Garvey's his percentage isn't going to go up. Schiff's will.
No, I think this is about it might go up a little bit. Well, actually, percentage wise, it probably won't go up that much because even, the people who are going to vote on the general when it's Biden and Trump are on the ballots, I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. There's still a lot of people will vote for Garvey. Millions of people will end up voting for him. It in the end won't make a difference. So congratulations, Senator Schiff. He'll be senator now until the day he dies, probably. So that should be fun. And
what do you think about Katie Porter spending money on Early, who didn't even have any really, like, and we know his name because he's a, you know, perennial candidate. Republican. We see him like every election cycle. We're like, oh, what's he running for now? But nobody knew who Early was. And yet Katie Porter was like, oh, this is the hill I'm going to die on this election. What do you think about that?
It was a weird choice, honestly. I because she was spending money on trying to get a Republican candidate who had no backing at all. Like, he wasn't, like, Eric Early just throws his hat in the ring on everything. He's run for Senate. He ran for Attorney General, didn't he? He ran for Attorney General. Like, he's run for, I mean, Congress. He's run for everything. He's one of those Republicans who just kind of, like, makes the rounds. I wouldn't be surprised if that's Steve Garvey's future, is like, after he runs for Senate and does better than what people expected, he might run in a more favorable district, like a more favorable congressional district, and win. So who knows? I don't think he'll ever go back down to like state legislature. That's probably beneath him, or, and I'm not saying beneath him in terms of like the assembly is bad. I'm saying he's got that celebrity mindset if he wants to be on the big stage. But yeah, I think it was a weird strategy by her. I don't know if you saw the news. Katie Porter came out and sounded a lot like Donald Trump after she lost. She came out after
I saw the news.
She says that the California Senate primary was rigged. And of course, everyone pounced on her and said, why would you have said rigged? Because that sounds like something that Donald Trump would say about an election. And then recently she came out and said, obviously, I wish I'd chosen a different word, said Porter, Tuesday on an episode of Pod Save America. At no time and no way would I ever suggest that there's anything other than a careful, thoughtful, amazing election system that she actually should be the model for a lot in the country, in my opinion. So she had to walk it back a little bit and say, like, no, I'm not saying the election system, how we have it in California, is rigged. I'm saying that it's rigged in other ways. She went on to say, because of you, we had the establishment running scared with standing 3-1 in TV spending and an onslaught of billionaires spending millions to rig this election. Porter's choice of words was quickly compared to that of former President Donald Trump, who falsely claimed since the 2020 election that the contest was rigged and characterized by widespread election fraud. So she goes on to say on the podcast, outcomes are manipulated and distorted when you have people coming in spending millions and millions of dollars at the last minute, and that money is not disclosed until after the election.
I understand that comment. How does that, if it's not exposed until after the election, what does that have to do with the outcome? How does that make it rigged? I didn't see the correlation between the two.
Well, I think because you can't use it as fodder, like, as an argument against your opponent. Like, if there's some shady super PAC who is helping one candidate, and then we don't know until after the election, she can't say, oh, well, this shady super PAC is doing something shady, so you guys shouldn't vote for him. But regardless, I don't know. Like, people were supporting her too. Like, super PACs were supporting her. PACs were supporting her. She had a lot of money. Like, lots of money was rolling into Katie. She had like millions from her congressional, millions from raising. It's not like she had a lack of money. It's not like she was some grassroots politician who just came out of nowhere. She's pretty well known, if albeit just for the fact that she has a whiteboard. I think she just, it sounds like she's bitter because she lost and she was outspent by Adam Schiff. And like I'm sure she wouldn't be whining if the powers that be lined up behind her. If all that money lined up behind her, I think she probably wouldn't come out and say it was rigged. I think she's just mad even if she came in second for the top two, maybe she wouldn't be whining. But she goes on to say, outcomes are manipulated and distorted when you have people coming in spending millions of dollars. I already read that part. That term rigged, though, is a very loaded term in the era of Trump. This was Adam Schiff. He's responding. He said, the term rigged, though, is a very loaded term in the era of Trump. It connotes fraud or ballot stuffing, false claims like those of Donald Trump, Schiff said. And I think that what's remarkable is Democrats very quickly rallied to say, no, we don't use that language. The election was legitimate. And this is a sharp contrast to how the Republican Party treats allegations of rigged elections. which they've gone along with. So, sore loser? I don't know. What do you think?
I think it was a sore loser comment. It does kind of lead me to question, and I'm curious on your opinion on this. So she was Congress for a couple terms, and she had a close race last time with Scott Baugh, the Republican, but she had way more money than he did. Millions more. And I forget the exact figures. I don't have them in front of me, but she definitely had a much larger war chest than Scott Baugh. And then he came pretty close to her. And I didn't hear anyone saying that's only because of her money that she won that race. And so, you know, she won by people supported her. People chose to, you know, vote for her over Scott Baugh. Now she has stepped out. She's not running for that congressional seat again. And Scott Baugh is the clear front runner. And I'm wondering, do you think she committed political suicide? Do you think her career is done?
Possibly. I always wonder the risk that politicians take when they run for something and they lose, and then they kind of have to fall back on another race. And then how
right.
do they
she
do
wasn't
or how
turned
do they
out. I mean, it's Congress. She couldn't turn out.
Yes, she can keep going. Did she spend too much on the Senate campaign and now she's got to try and defend her seat? Like, we'll see. If she could probably raise the money, though, I think, again. But it does put her at a disadvantage going forward, right?
Yeah, I mean, where does she go from here? Like you said, she could go back to Congress, you know, 2026.
Yeah. She could, yeah.
But then people also might be like, hey, you left us. You wanted better things. You weren't here for us.
Yeah, maybe. And maybe if the way things, you know, it's incumbency is a big deal. And being an incumbent yes. helps a lot. So once somebody's in there, it's Congress, you can flip a lot of seats. Congress, you're always flipping seats back and forth. But incumbency helps a lot. So losing that seat to a Republican changes the landscape of that district. So now maybe it's not such a favorable district for her to run in. So we'll see where she goes from here. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we see her as a political analyst on MSNBC or CNN for the next couple of years until
she's... Seriously? You think people want to listen to her?
Oh, they've had her on the news with that whiteboard all the time. So I'm sure they'll be like, you and your whiteboard, come on to MSNBC and talk about, you
I'm
going to
take over the whiteboard thing.
It's going to be your thing now.
I'm
going to
make
be
it
the
mine.
Well, Karl Rove also does the whiteboard thing, which I don't really understand, but that's like their gimmick is the whiteboard thing. I guess they want to show people like, hey, here's the breakdown of these things. And,
I'm going to one-up and do a post-it notes. That's my thing.
You'll do post-it notes? I think we should do it like coloring books and like crayons to make it even simpler. Because it feels like that's how they're talking to people. It's like, well, you people are too stupid to understand. So I'm going to write it like this for like a child. So maybe we should just break out like the crayons and just be like, this is how.
Yeah, let's do drawings. We'll just be like, let me show you pictures.
Yeah.
They'll be terrible pictures, but it'll be
fun. They'll be like, okay, yeah. So imagine this cat. This cat lives on your land. How do you treat him? This cat wants to pass a law in Sacramento. What does he do? He takes money and gives it to politicians and lobbies. Anyway. Okay.
Anyway.
So Schiff versus Garvey in November. Do you want to move on to a mayoral race?
Sure.
Okay. This is a race that obviously I had personal interest in. It was here in San Diego. It was Todd Gloria, who is not popular at all. I think when I last looked at his polls, he was like 30% approval rating. But somehow, some way, he got 49% of the vote in this primary.
What is the population of San Diego City?
I think it's 2 million. So San Diego City really? Is weird because it goes like there's the city... There's La Jolla. It also goes down to Otay Mesa and San Ysidro. And like Chula Vista is like this weird thing like right in the middle. So it kind of spreads out and it goes up to Laguna Mesa. Sort yeah, like a donut or arches. It's weird how San Diego City is spread out everywhere. So yeah, it spreads a lot of area, San Diego. I think it's like maybe it's 1.5 or 2 million. If anyone in the chat wants to say like what fact check me on it live, I think it's around that amount. But so I was definitely interested in this because there are a couple reasons. I'll start with my own personal reasons. Todd Gloria has not been great for the city of San Diego. I'll tell you a story. When Kevin Faulkner was in office, we have this app. It's called the Get It Done app. You go into the Get It Done app, you can take a picture of something in the city and go, hey, there's graffiti here. Can you fix it? They'll be like, great. Send out city workers, they'll fix it, let you know, take a picture of it. I've used it a couple times. I'll be like, hey, there's trash on the side of the road. A day or two later, somebody comes by, picks up the trash, says, hey, all good, picked up the trash. Ever since Todd Gloria has taken over, now this is just anecdotal, this is just my own story, nothing really gets done. You can look at the Get It Done app, there's about 1,000 requests that have not been completed by the city. We have a trash can that's outside of where we live right now. For some reason, it's full of garbage. No one's come to pick it up. People in our neighborhood decide we're going to keep throwing more garbage on top of it because it's a garbage can, even though it's literally falling all over. Like, it's literally, there's like garbage bags on top of like fast food and Chick-fil-A, and it's like piling up. It's like a Jenga game. So I finally took a picture of it, put it in the Get It Done app. I said, hey, there's this garbage. It's starting to get flies. It's gross. It's starting to smell. Can you please come and get it? The message I got back from this Get It Done app was, we're sorry to inform you that this is not something that the city handles. Therefore, it's been sent out to the company that does handle it. That was the end of the message. The city just shrugged its shoulders and went, yep, sorry, we don't handle this stuff. Sorry that there's garbage all over the streets. That's anecdotal. I think the city has gotten worse. I think there it's gotten dirtier. I don't think the streets have been fixed. He's been horrible. With that said, there was a lady running in this race by the name of Genevieve L. Jones Wright. A little history about Genevieve L. Jones Wright. She ran for public defender 4 years ago, I feel like. Was it 4 years ago? Or she, no, I'm sorry. She was running for district attorney. She was a public defender. She was running for district attorney against Summer Stevens. Thank God Summer Stevens won. Genevieve L. Jones Wright is a Soros-backed candidate. And I know that sounds conspiratorial. She is absolutely backed by Soros. You can look at it. She's got plenty of money backed by Soros and his nonprofit. She is soft on crime. She's all about social justice. She's all about DEI. She's all about that stuff. So we had this horrible, horrible situation where it was Todd Gloria, who's ineffective and does nothing, versus a George Soros plant. And you're sitting here in San Diego going, what the heck do I do? Well, I'll tell you. Thankfully, the results were, I say this kind of tongue in cheek, thankfully, Todd Gloria made it to the top spot with 49.99%. And the second guy is a guy by the name of Larry Turner. He made it with 23% of the vote as an independent. Genevieve L. Jones Wright did not come close. It was like 15.9%. So she wasn't even close to the top two. She didn't even scratch, sniff the top two. So at least I'm like, phew, at least the Soros plant isn't going to make it in. Yeah, Todd Gloria is horrible, but he's not Soros. But now we have a choice between Todd Gloria and Larry Turner. We had done research about Larry Turner, and we didn't, you know, they approached us about having Larry Turner on, and Camille, being the incredible researcher that she is, and this is just, you know, fair warning to anybody who requests to be on the show. You will be looked into. You will be researched. We're going to look into you. Camille found immediately what?
So I have to be careful with what I say because there was already a lawsuit that was dismissed.
Right.
Allegedly, Larry Turner did not or does not live in the city of San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
I know this to be fact.
Right. And how do you know this to be fact?
So this was what, last September, October, when we...
several months ago. Yeah.
And we were quiet about it because I guess we just didn't really think there was a point. But what happened was, I don't even know why. Okay. Can I say, like, how much can I say?
You can say whatever you want. Like, I mean,
okay. So his campaign manager had approached us, and for some reason I looked into his campaign manager, and I didn't have any reason to, but when I'm like researching a candidate, I really want a full picture, and it's nothing nefarious. It's just like, I try to just get a whole picture of who are they, where do they live, their, you know, their family, who's working with them, what's going on here. So I looked into his campaign manager. Nothing there. I don't have like anything shady to say about his campaign manager, but I don't stalk people, but I do tend to find their addresses easily without like giving much effort. And it's just sort of like, okay, this is where they live. No big deal. Well, anyway, I happen to find the campaign manager's address, his personal residence. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I won't put that out there. But then through trying to find out more about Larry Turner, I found out that he was using his campaign manager's address, that the residence that his campaign manager owned. And we knew that they had met and then learned that they were both interested in politics. And I thought, oh, well, maybe he's his landlord. You know, and that, nothing wrong there. Like, maybe that's how they met. He's his landlord. They got to talking, politics, whatever. Cool. But as I went on and on through my research, I discovered that wasn't the case. And what I did was I looked at FEC filings, and Larry Turner had donated to a campaign. I forget whose campaign, but he had an El Cajon address, and this was in June of 2023. And I have access to all California voters' voting data. I mean, I can't tell you who they voted for, but I know that they're, I know their party there, and when they change, and if they make any sort of change, if they update their address or their party preference or whatever, any change, it's noted on there. So I have access to see all this. Well, the last change that Larry Turner made on his voter registration was then in July, like just a couple weeks after this donation. And I went through a whole lot of paperwork and property taxes and whatnot to find his El Cajon address, which is this like beautiful single family home. And El Cajon is, I think, I want to say 15 plus miles inland of San Diego City. So, and he went through great lengths to basically transfer his property records out of his name and into some random name so that it couldn't be found. And then, you know, re-registered using his manager's address, but his wife isn't registered there. It was kind of messy. And we told them, like, look, we found this. Can you please comment on this? And then they were like, oh, well, wouldn't this be great controversy for the show? And we're like, no, that's not what we're about. And so we were just like, we're not going to do that. Well, then someone else found out and then raised a lawsuit, which was then dismissed. And he probably did find some address to move into. But it just questions, why do you start off your campaign lying? And why are you running for, you know, I get that he works in the city of San Diego, but why are you running for the mayor of a city you don't even live in? Meanwhile, the El Cajon mayor is actually running for Congress right now. And so I felt like you could just wait and run for that mayoral position, depending on what happens with your current mayor.
Right.
So,
yeah, it was something we hadn't really spoken about it publicly, but I figured now that it's going to be Gloria versus Turner, I think we kind of kept quiet because I was like, I don't even know if this guy's going to like make it to the top two. So it might not even be worth it. Like, but he's made it to the top two. And so I figured it's worth us talking about it.
And we have received, you know, date and timestamp text messages. We can remember everything we just said.
You know, if you know anything about us, we always come with the receipts. We always do our research. We were kind of put in this weird position where we were like, they were like, oh, well, why don't you have us on and we'll talk about it? And then I was like, okay, but we're not a gotcha show. And we always pride ourselves on the fact that, like, we have guests on because we honestly want them to come on and talk about, like, what they're doing, what they want to accomplish. We want to give people, guests, politicians, stuff like that, we want to give them that space where they can talk for an hour and, like, really get to, like, to the detail. They can get past the two-minute news segment. And a lot of our guests love that. That's why they come on the show. They love the fact that they can be like, I'm going to talk about five subjects at length. And so our whole thing is we're not a gotcha. Like, we don't bring people on so we can do gotchas and be like, hey, we got you. We're going to embarrass you for a viral clip. So we were in this weird position of like, we're not going to bring somebody on to do a gotcha because that's not our show. And then, but we're also not going to bring somebody on. And then if stuff comes out, people will be like, why did you platform this guy if he's not being completely honest? Us knowing that that's what's going on behind the scenes. So that's why we were like, nah, sorry, it's not going to work out for you. And we had talked about it and we went back and forth, like, should we have it on, should we not? And I was like, no, we're not going to have this guy on. And I have the same concerns as well. Like, why is a guy who's up until recently, he supposedly lives in Ocean Beach now. Why is a guy running for San Diego City Mayor when he lived in El Cajon for a long time? And why doesn't he just run for El Cajon? And I respect that he's worked as a police officer in San Diego. But there's a big difference, I feel like, between working as a police officer in San Diego and living day to day in San Diego. Like, do you see the little issues that I see? Do you notice the garbage can sitting out on the street for 4 weeks? Like, that's stuff that, like, I don't know. Like, are you really embedded into the city to understand what's going on? So with that said, we don't have any plans on having Larry Turner on, or Todd Gloria for that matter. This is the best case scenario for me personally in this race, because I'm like, cool. Like, I don't, now that Genevieve L. Jones Wright, she was the one I was really scared of taking over the city. I'd be like, this, we'd become LA overnight if she won as mayor. I mean, even worse than San Francisco. I think she's even farther left than London Breed, who London Breed has actually moved towards the middle, and we're going to talk about that. So as soon as she lost and it was Larry Turner versus Todd Gloria, I was like, okay, great. I don't have to worry about it anymore. It's either this unknown guy that it came in from El Cajon, or Todd Gloria, who's completely incompetent. I don't know. I'll take someone who's incompetent, doesn't get anything done, over an activist who ruins our city. So any final thoughts on San Diego City Mayor?
Yeah.
No, I think we covered it.
I'm glad I'm not in your position. I don't have to choose between those two.
Yeah, it's, and I had feared this too. Like, I had feared that we were in a weird position of like, and this is California politics. This is what stinks about California politics. It's like, if it was Genevieve L. Jones Wright versus Todd Gloria, do you hold your nose and vote for Todd Gloria? Because you're like, the other option is just so bad. Like,
right.
Yeah, it's, so thankfully it's, I don't really care who wins now. It is what it is. So I wish Kevin Faulkner was running again. I think he would have easily won and become mayor, and things were good.
We were planning on talking about his race.
Well, there's not really much to talk about because, no one faced off against him. So he's running, as far as I know, no one ran against him.
I thought he was running for Tara Lasser, whatever her name is. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I meant. Is that, Tara Lasser Reamer.
So it's just them two going to the general.
Yeah. There was no one running against him in the primary. They cleared the path for him in that race.
And is that your district?
I should know this. Yes, it is my district. You should know this. Yes, it is my district. Because they switched all districts. It was Nathan Fletcher was prior my supervisor. So now it's not. Now it's Tara Lasser.
Wow, you just hit from all angles.
Yeah, I'm just getting represented by a whole bunch of winners right now. So, Tara Lasser Reamer, who appears in dating profiles with her kid. So that's fun. That's a whole different story. Anyway, but let's talk about some good news. There was good news in the race. in the election. I don't want to make it sound like it's all bad news. Usually when people hear about California election results, they're like, it's all bad news. The biggest news that I had tweeted about that got some major traction was what happened in San Francisco. If you're not aware of what happened in San Francisco, there were two city propositions, so not state propositions, were put on the ballot, and they won overwhelmingly with like 60% of the vote. So it wasn't even close. It wasn't like 51% it squeaked by. It was overwhelmingly in favor of these two propositions, to the point where like the San Francisco Chronicle the next day came out with a headline like, San Francisco is no longer a progressive city. Like that's
okay,
they
so
were
these
like
were good ones.
These were good ones, yeah. And they were
I'm not familiar with what happened.
So there were two propositions, city propositions, Prop E and Prop F, and Mayor Breed was in support of both of them. And that's why I said Mayor Breed, who is facing re-election, you know, she's in a hot seat right now. Like, she's not guaranteed to win again. She's moved back towards the middle.
Okay.
Not towards the right. I would say she's more moderate now.
Yeah.
So there's these two propositions, Prop E, which allows for the use of body camera footage to satisfy reporting requirements and allows the installation of surveillance and facial recognition cameras without approval from the police commission or board of supervisors. So that basically gives the police more power to fight crime and like recognize criminals and what's going on. And the bigger one, I think, that a lot of people were kind of like, wow, this actually passed in San Francisco, was Prop F, which would require drug screening for certain beneficiaries of county assistance. So if you were to tell someone that drug screening of those receiving welfare would pass in San Francisco, I think they probably would have said hell has frozen over, because that's like, that's been like a Republican thing for so long. The idea of, well, if you're on welfare, you should be getting drug tested because you shouldn't be on drugs and getting welfare. Like, the idea is we're trying to help you. And if you're squandering it on drugs, then what's the point? We're just throwing money down the toilet.
Like, that's been like a fight since I was a kid, maybe even before. Like, my
it's
whole
been,
life, I feel like fighting for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's been a fight for a long time in a lot of places. And here we are, San Francisco, the bastion of Republican ideals, had passed this proposition, which now makes it a requirement that you have to, certain beneficiaries have to go through this. That's big news. And I think the biggest thing, if you're reading between the tea leaves with this, is that San Francisco has gotten so bad that this is what's the result. People are lashing out and there is a backlash against how bad San Francisco has gotten. And the fact that it wasn't close, it was 60-40 for both of them, I think. That just shows you, like, people are fed up in San Francisco. They're looking for more common sense. They're done with, like, the progressive ideals or trying all that stuff. They're like, we want some sanity. We want some safety. Look, we just want our city back to what it was. Like, every day, it feels like every week, there's this store is leaving Union Square. It was Zara's, then it was Macy's, and it was Nordstrom's. Like, it's just every week, like, somebody's leaving Union Square. I think people are just fed up with it. I'm actually watching the video right now. Measure F was 63-37%. So it was even better than 60-40.
Oh, wow.
So that's good news. Good news in California. If in San Francisco you can get these two things passed, I think I've always said there's hope for California. But I think that's good news for a lot of people to say, like, wait, these things can actually pass and, like, San Francisco is the one to do it. Great.
That's amazing.
Maybe there is hope for us after all.
With Katie Porter said it's rigged.
No comment from Katie Porter on whether that was rigged or not. Would be funny if it's just Katie Porter, every race she doesn't like, she just comes out and says it was rigged and then like apologizes. She comes out with her whiteboard and is like, this was rigged. And then they're like, what do you mean rigged? And she's like, no, I don't mean like rigged. Like, I just mean like it's just not fair.
It's money.
They're like, it's just money. They're like, well, you sound like Donald Trump. No, that's not what I meant. I didn't mean rigged like Donald Trump rigged. I mean like rigged like California money rigged. Okay. So I thought that was really good news that San Francisco is finally trying to see the light a little bit. And
see, your vote matters.
It does. It absolutely does. And we are big believers that stop whining. Stop saying that your vote doesn't matter. because it does in California. It absolutely matters. And look at what happened in San Francisco. Like, things can change. Momentum can swing. They got rid of Chesa Boudin. They've instituted these two propositions. I mean, you would think like Republicans are like taking over San Francisco, but this is just like moderate Democrats are like, we're tired of this crap. Like, we want like a normal city back. Is that okay? It's funny watching all the San Francisco papers be like, this is the death of like a progressive city. It was fun while it lasted. It's like, really? It was fun while it lasted while you're stepping over.
Where was the fun?
Where was the fun? Where was the fun?
How was that fun?
Where was the fun in stepping over poop and homeless people? That was the fun part? Okay. But anyway. I'm trying to think of what's the next one, and then I think we'll end with Prop 1. That'll be the big.
Okay.
Because we can bang out these other ones. This other race that was kind of notable was the recall of Shasta County Supervisor. I don't know if you've been following that.
Pablo Price.
What's that?
Is that Pablo Price's name?
Kevin Cry.
Okay.
So there's a recall of Kevin Cry. They've been calling him one of the far right people who took over Shasta County, county supervisors, county board of supervisors. As of today, before the podcast, there is a difference. So yes, in favor of recall is 4,527 votes. No is 4,573 votes.
Wow.
So again, if you don't think your vote matters, look at those numbers. This could literally come down to like less than 100 votes, whether this guy keeps his job or not. So 50 votes is what separates him.
Wow.
That is very, very close.
Which I want to speak on that for a second, because I admit that I could get, like, I vote, but I can get politically lazy as far as like talking to people or trying to activate people in my own community, because right now it's safe, if you will, but we're always one election away from not being safe. My entire city council is Republican. My mayor is Republican. My assembly member is Republican. My county board supervisor is Republican. Like, I'm in it. Like, it's a safe district, if you will. But, you know, if we get lazy, we get comfortable with that and just be like, oh, you know, everyone else will do the work. Everyone else will keep voting. Everyone else will keep it red or at least moderate, you know. Then no, that's where we're going to lose it. And so don't get comfortable.
Conversely,
if you live in a really safe district, don't get comfortable.
Don't get comfortable. And conversely, if you're in a place that seems like it'll never change, you might be only one election away from changing momentum.
Yeah.
As we just saw in San Francisco. If you're you might be sitting in the middle of San Francisco going, oh, things will never get better. The city sucks. Like, it's full of, you know, uber progressive socialists. Changed overnight. All of a sudden, there's going to be a whole bunch of stuff that's going to change. And they're, I think it's just the beginning of what they're going to do in San Francisco. So, you know, conversely, if you're depressed and you're like, there's no changing it, like, San Francisco changed. And if San Francisco can change, who knows what else can change in California?
And we always talk about, like, we don't think California is red, but we can make it purple.
Yeah.
But it's not going to happen overnight. We just have to keep consistently chipping away at it. And this is proof. I don't know if this is turning purple, but it's clearly, if San Francisco can change, there's hope for anybody.
Right. This is something we used to talk about in Coffee in California Politics, was progress to purple. Like, would you take a California that's a battleground state, not a red state, but like a battleground state where it's purple and nobody knows which way it's going to go? I bet you most people would say I'd take purple over a deep blue state. Do you want to hear more about Democrats sounding like Donald Trump? In another recall election, this is just signature gathering. This wasn't an actual election. DEA Pamela Price is alleging recall signature fraud. She's the Alameda district attorney. There is a recall against her. They're basically saying, we're going to Chesa Boudin you, just like we did to him. Her first response was racism. She said this has to do with racism and right-wingers. You know, Alameda County, the bastion of Donald Trump, MAGA Republicans.
Always is.
Now she's claiming that there's signature fraud. She said, quote, "We have extensive evidence that we've collected from volunteers and citizens in Alameda County who have come to us to make these claims, and they deserve for our election integrity to be maintained." So,
y'all, sometimes people just don't like you.
Yeah.
Sometimes you are not good at your job and you need to be recalled / fired.
Yeah. She issued a letter to Attorney General Bonta, and he responded, "In your letter, you allege that signature gatherers for the recall campaign have employed deceptive tactics to acquire voter signatures for the recall. Thank you for raising this matter with us. It is imperative that our electoral system operates with the utmost integrity and our principles of democracy are protected. At this time, the allegations regarding unlawful signature gathering tactics should be directed to the Secretary of State, who serves as the state's chief elections officer." So as you know, I think a attorney, you made it to district attorney of Alameda County. You should probably know that all election complaints go to the Secretary of State, not the Attorney General. So good job, DA Pamela Price, for not knowing that. Anyway, let's see what else is left. I think that's all of it. Before we can finish in talking about Prop 1. So Prop 1, which we did a whole episode on, Prop 1 unfortunately passed. They called it yesterday. Was it yesterday afternoon?
Yeah, I'll see what
I was hoping that it was still undecided by the time this podcast came out, but it had passed. Sadly, Prop 1 narrowly passed. Very narrowly passed. I want to see.
I didn't even do the math on it.
You didn't do the math on it. Let's see. I can pull it up. Let's see. Secretary of State. I feel like we should have had this ready to go. Last I checked, it shot ahead.
It was
ahead.
A difference of just under 29,000 votes, which for a state our size, that's
not that much.
Close.
A couple percentage points. So sadly, I mean, if you want to know more about what Prop 1 does, you can go back and listen to that episode that we did about Prop 1. I will say this. Even though it won, I think it's still a vote of confidence on Gavin Newsom and how he's handling homelessness. Because this was like his signature thing. To the point where he had delayed his own state of the speech. I think he's going to now that it won, but he delayed his state of the state. We're going to have to watch it. We're going to have to watch it. It's our job. It's our duty to our listeners and our followers that we have to watch this so that it's more bearable for them to watch it as well. I had an article about this. I have too many tabs open. Oh, let's see. It said, this is from CalMatters, "While the ballot measure initially seemed a shoo-in, public support wavered in recent months. In part, that's because the state's ballooning deficit came into stark focus, with the Legislative Analysis Office projecting last month that it might be as big as $73 billion. Opponents of the ballot measure had also raised concerns that it could siphon money from the community health, mental health organizations, possibly causing them to close. Ed Kauser, a UC San Diego professor of political science, he says Newsom failed to convince voters on just how effective other billion-dollar investments in helping unhoused people have been. Quote, to me, given the strong message, the money behind the message, the lack of organized opposition, I would have guessed at the beginning of this campaign it was headed for a 60-40 win. Nevertheless, it did squeak by, and under the just-approved ballot measure, counties are now required to invest 30% of money to receive the state's millionaires' tax into housing programs." I would agree. I think if you had looked at the numbers, and we talked about how the polls shifted, they shifted big, like leading up to the election. I think as more people started to learn about Prop 1, I think the polls shifted massively. Because at first it was like, yeah, it was like 63% in December. And then by like the end of February, it was down to like 53%. So it had like, and
our
that's
podcast.
What it got. Because of our podcast. We'll take all the credit. Thank you very much.
It
was because of our podcast. Thank you very much. People rant. Thank you to everyone who spread the podcast. But no, seriously, I think more people learned about it. Like, that's why Gavin Newsom had to go on this like barnstorming campaign around the state to be like, no, we need to support Prop 1, because it was like a shoe-in in December. And then all of a sudden, 2 or 3 weeks before, they saw the polls showing that it could possibly lose. And up until about 2 days ago, people were like, it could lose. Like, it could actually lose. And then when there was, I forget what county came in and it dumped like a whole bunch of yes votes, like, and mathematically they were like, there's no way like the no side's going to win in any of the remaining counties. So I think, and we talked at the beginning of this episode, I said there's a reason why they put Prop 1 in the primaries, and it is because of low turnout. I think it also caught people off guard. I think if Prop 1 had been introduced in January and was not voted on until November, I think it would have lost by like 10 percentage points, honestly. Yes. Because I think it shifted so much as people started to learn about it, that the more time it had, the more people learned about it, I think people would have in droves voted no on this. Because they're right. Like, why would you give the state $6.4 billion more when you've already spent about $18 to $20 billion since 2018, and there's been no improvements, actually gotten worse with homelessness, yes. And they're coming back and saying like, oh, no, this time, if you give us 6.4, we'll really make sure we fix homelessness. Sadly, I think the only people who are cheering after yesterday's news were probably nonprofit, homeless nonprofits and construction unions, because those are the ones who are going to, they are going to make bank for the next decade or so off of this money. So sadly, Prop 1 did pass. Will it make any difference? I'm going to doubt it. I'm going to say doubtful. Will Gavin Newsom spin it to be like, you know, we passed this measure and where it's going to help homelessness? Of course. I also think it would have been a great black eye to him if this lost and he wants to run for president in 2028 and he couldn't use this to try and fix homelessness. Yeah. Because at this point, like, they're all in on the, let's just hide homeless as much as possible. They got Care Court. They've changed the legal definition of what gravely disabled means, which now means substance abuse. They've got Prop 1 now. So they've got enough tools to make homelessness disappear. Oh, it's not going to do the thing again, is it? I was waiting for the balloons.
I'm so tired. I would have lost it.
But yeah, I think it would have been a nice black eye on Gavin Newsom. I still think it is sort of a black eye that people just didn't believe in him, that even his charisma couldn't get enough people to support it. What are your thoughts?
Well, and when you think about the fact that the no, there was like, what, $1,000? Literally $1,000 was all they had for like vote no on Prop 1. And it got this close.
Yeah. Yeah. It was only $1,000 and people on social media and podcasts who were really kind of talking about what Prop 1 does. And it was us. Yeah, we're going to take all the credit that it was this close. Why not? Who knows? Maybe
we'll do better next time.
Well, sorry. Yeah. If there's a prop, we'll do an episode way earlier. Maybe we shouldn't say take credit for the fact that it's so close. Maybe we should take the blame for the fact that it passed. We should be like, we should have informed people earlier.
Oh, yeah. We're humble like that.
Yeah. Sorry. There's a lot of subjects to cover in California. We just can't cover every single one. We try to do our best. But any final thoughts on Prop 1 before we close out the episode?
No, I mean, just as a reminder, this will raise your taxes eventually because it'll have to be paid back. And this does, unfortunately, take away a little bit of local government control and send it to Sacramento. So for those who, you know, aren't familiar with what Prop 1 is, you can go listen to our episode, but that's what it does, and that's why we were hugely against it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I try to defend our position on NBC. That was kind of fun when I was on NBC and faced off against James Cannon.
It's so good. You guys all have to go watch that.
I didn't know it was going to be like that style. Like, he had fired at me. I was like, oh, I didn't know we were doing this sort of combative panel, but okay. I even told him afterward. I told James, I was like, that was fun. That was good. So anyway, it was fun being on a in the middle of a newsroom in the middle of election cycle. So
this is where Paul leaves us. They bring him on permanently and he says goodbye to the show. No, I'm just kidding.
Nah.
It didn't happen.
Yeah, I like this much better. I don't want to be behind a desk just repeating like what the teleprompter tells me. All right. So those are the election results. Obviously, you can go check out a lot of election results. Oh, my gosh. We didn't talk about the one race that we're really interested in. Okay. Really quickly. Really, really quick. How did we forget this race? The 75th district.
You didn't put it on the notes. And I thought, okay, he doesn't want to talk about it.
I don't know why I didn't put it. We have to talk about the 75th district.
Oh, we both just got back. We're both tired, all right?
Yeah, we're still just getting over jet lag and everything. So, all right, real quick. 75th district, you all know, if you follow the show, is Carl DeMaio. Carl DeMaio jumped into this race and late.
Larry Turner'd his way into this race with a fake address.
He did Turner his way into it. Because he rented a room from somebody in that area. So we don't believe he actually lives in that district.
No, he doesn't. He didn't leave his husband to go rent a room from somebody.
Right. And we have the receipts. So don't come at us. Don't at us. And so he jumped in pretty late. Andrew Hayes was already the endorsed Republican candidate, like the San Diego County GOP, California GOP. They all were behind him. Everybody was behind him. Even Marie Waldron was behind him. She's the one who's termed out. So like everybody was behind Andrew Hayes. Carl DeMaio jumped in. My insiders are telling me that like now it's Andrew Hayes versus Carl DeMaio. It was scary there for a minute. I was very depressed on election night because it was Carl DeMaio jumped out to a huge lead and Kevin Giusa, who was the Democrat, was in second. And
this
I was like,
"This is not your district, correct? Just to clarify.
This is not my district. This is not my district. I care generally in politics, but
it's the assembly. Like it matters.
It does. So, you know, if you want someone in the assembly doing a good job, not wasting it for their own self promotion. So night of election, I was very depressed that it was going to be him versus Kevin Giusa, which means, again, he could start measuring the drapes in his office. But all of a sudden, a couple days later, and this is why elections take a while, Andrew Hayes surged into second place. He's held on to second place, so it looks like it's going to be Andrew Hayes versus Carl DeMaio.
Interesting.
Very, very interesting. I was watching the results, and I was like, I can't believe this Kevin Giusa guy's holding on. Like, how many Democrat votes are actually out there for him to get in a very red district? And obviously not that much because he's kind of stuck at the same spot since election night. So now we have Carl DeMaio, who jumped into the race late. You have Andrew Hayes, who's been endorsed by everybody. Insiders have told me that all those endorsements, the San Diego GOP, the California GOP, all those endorsements of all the assembly people, everybody like Brian Jones, everybody. I think Brian Jones. I'm sorry if Brian Jones didn't do it. But I think it's like everybody. It's like 100 people. All those endorsements are likely going to stick. So now you're going to have basically the endorsed candidate, Andrew Hayes, versus Carl DeMaio. And it should be interesting who's going to win because Carl DeMaio is a notorious. He's very good at fundraising. Andrew Hayes has got to keep up with him a little bit. He's got all the endorsements, so we'll see what happens. I think this is my premonition. This is my prediction. I think if Carl DeMaio ends up losing this race, I think he is basically exit stage right in politics in San Diego. I think he's worn out his welcome. I think if he doesn't win this race, he'll be 1 for 5 in races. He's already off the radio. I think people will just tune him out, and I think he's lost all his influence. So that's why I'm particularly interested in this race, because we're all rooting for Carl DeMaio to go down. Anyway.
Yes.
I can't believe we forgot that race. Wait, what? All right. So I think we covered all the races that I want to cover. Again, there's a lot. You can go check them out yourself. Go to the Secretary of State website. You can check out every single race that happened in California, even the federal races. There's a whole bunch. We didn't even get into like congressional races just because there's so many. And again, it's a California-based podcast. We focus on the local stuff. And that's basically it for tonight's episode, since we're over by a little bit. Any final thoughts?
No.
Nope. You're just like, I'm just glad I made it through this awake.
Yeah, San Diego, I'm so sorry you had to choose between Tom LaPria and Larry Turner. I'm so sorry that Carl DeMille might become an assembly member. Get out, vote for Andrew Hayes if you lived in the 75th district. If you have a real address in the set, don't go rent a room.
Yeah. Don't engage in any false voting. That's not good. It's not worth it to vote in the assembly
room. My family's off, too. I'm sorry. Everyone here is jet-lagged, and apparently they forgot it's podcast night, so there's a lot of noise.
There's a lot of noise. They're also on European time. They're like, what? but anyway. All right, so we'll be back to our normal schedule Thursday every week at 6 p.m. Good to be back, and this is the home stretch now, where primaries are over, we got our presidential races set up, all the races are basically decided for California coming up. It's going to be a mad dash. Before you know it, it will be November, and there's going to be a lot to talk about. So, with that, I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. Make sure you like, share, subscribe, review, comment. Helps with the algorithm for people can find us. And the best free way to share and support this show is share it with somebody else. And that's basically it. So we'll see you all on the next one. Later.
Thank you for listening to another episode of California Underground. If you like what you heard, remember to subscribe, like, and review it. And follow California Underground on social media for updates as to when new episodes are available.